Welcome. We're so glad you decided to join us. We're doing a series on health and healing. And it was a series that we'll be studying over a period of about 3 months. This one is number 8 in our series. It's entitled The Atmosphere of Praise. I don't know what you think of when you think of atmosphere, but there, in fact, are a number of different atmospheres or surroundings or environments in which we live. There's the obvious one, the physical atmosphere, but there are also social atmospheres, there are spiritual atmospheres, there's mental, and so forth. And so we're going to explore some of those together today. This particular lesson focuses on all of those. We're going to try to touch on all of them. The physical atmospheres consist mainly of what we call air. Pure, hopefully, air is absolutely essential for our health, for our growth, for the maintenance of our healthy physical bodies. A pure spiritual atmosphere is just as necessary for our spiritual life and growth and maintenance. Every one of us, at the same time, carries with us a mental or social atmosphere that affects all around us, and they in turn carry atmospheres that affect us. I'm sure you're all aware of stories at times when people have, even families, have been in situations where the atmosphere that they were forced to breathe was not healthy, and often groups have died. We think of mining accidents that have been plaguing our area recently, and those people died probably because they couldn't get enough pure air. There are, of course, contaminants that are very dangerous, such as carbon monoxide and cigarette smoke, and other atmospheric pollutants that we could talk about. Well, anyone who's had the experience of being, we sometimes say, suffocated, in other words, the amount of air you think you need, you can't get, knows how desperate it makes you feel. I wonder, do we have the same desperate feeling for the pure spiritual atmosphere, the atmosphere of heaven that God intends for us to partake of? And as we mention that, let's just mention some basic points. When we go to the scriptures, we look at the Hebrew or the Greek, the same word for spirit means also wind or breath. So the spirit is a kind of atmosphere, if you will, using the biblical terminology. While we may be able to survive physically for a brief period, a lot of people get desperate by the time they get to a minute. A lot more get desperate by the time they get to 2 minutes. A few people have trained themselves so they can actually survive for 7 or 8 minutes. But beyond that, our bodies just don't work. But in fact, if God stepped back and removed the power of the Holy Spirit from us, we couldn't survive more than a second. Now, many of us, there are many worldly people today, atheists especially, who would deny that they need God in any way. But it's still true, whether they believe it or not. So, in light of all that, let's take a look at Genesis 1. This is a familiar passage. I mean, everybody must have heard it. But let's just take a note here of what we read in Genesis. I'm going to read chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. And let's just consider what this might say to us about how our atmosphere, if I can use that term, how our atmosphere began. In the beginning, when God created the universe, I'm reading from the Good News Bible, the earth was formless and desolate. The raging ocean that covered everything was engulfed in total darkness, and the Spirit of God was moving over the water. So my first question for our group today is, does this mean there was no oxygen, no air, but there was water? And if there was water, what would happen to that water if there was no air to sort of hold it down, in a sense? Have you ever thought about that?
Well, I thought the waters were both in the atmosphere and maybe solid. There was
but if
difference.
This is before God made an atmosphere, I mean, was the water there before the air was there? That's the question here. It sounds like it, doesn't it?
maybe there was a type of air there that wasn't the air we know today. Maybe it was space.
Well, but unless God changed the physical properties of water, if there's no air there, the water has to be either frozen solid in ice so it won't evaporate, or it's going to evaporate until the space that the air would be in is filled with water vapor.
Yeah.
And that
misty, a mist.
Yeah, something like that. That's a possibility.
Does it say it was not frozen?
It says that it was moving over the face of the waters. It doesn't say that it was ice. So we don't know. It's interesting when we look at the other planets in our solar system, Jupiter and Saturn and so forth, there's not one of them that has an atmosphere that is in any way, you know, compatible to human life.
Mm-hmm.
So how did our atmosphere get just right? And that's, of course, one of the things that scientists have been struggling with. You know, how did everything work out just right for us here on this Earth? Well, we don't know, of course. We have a few verses. I read two verses to try to explain that. Let's look at a couple more verses in that same chapter. Look at verses 6 to 8 in Genesis 1 and consider what that might add to our knowledge. If you're looking at the screen there, you will notice that on the right is the Good News Translation, and on the left is the New American Standard Translation, in case you prefer something a little more traditional. So I'll try to make them both available here so we can compare them as we're reading here. Then God commanded, I'm reading from the Good News Bible, let there be a dome. Now, the King James says firmament. And here you see in our New American Standard, it says an expanse in the midst of the waters. Let there be a dome to divide the water and to keep it in two separate places. And it was done. So God made a dome and it separated the water under it from the water above it. He named the dome sky. Evening passed and morning came. That was the second day. So what happened that day? Is that the day God created our special atmosphere with, you know, nitrogen and oxygen and so forth?
Well, I'll tell you, when I first read that, well, I don't know exactly what I thought when I first read it, but what I imagined was that possibly the whole Earth was in a fog.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You had water underneath that was running water. You had water in the atmosphere. You had water overhead. And then the fog kind of just fell and moved up and caused an atmosphere. So there, mm-hmm. I mean, not an atmosphere, but a dome, mm-hmm. where before it was just, you know, you couldn't see maybe a foot away from you, but later on, whatever happened, it separated it so that the fog went clear up into the sky like clouds, like a heavy cloud layer, and then you had water on the ground also.
Now, we know that there are a couple of, we'll talk more about this later, but there's a couple elements that really help to sort of even the temperature out. We know that if you're in space and the sun is shining on you, you're boiling hot on one side and you're freezing cold on the other side because there's nothing to even things out. We know that the two main substances that help to sort of even out the temperature are water and carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. So it without those, apparently we wouldn't be able to survive here at all.
Well, especially water, because it absorbs a lot of heat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's very clear that creation was a very orderly process. Some people have pointed out that day one, in which light was created, sort of prepares the way for day four, in which the sun, moon, and the stars were brought to view or created. Day two, in which the atmosphere was created, was in preparation for day five, because the birds would need the atmosphere to fly in, and of course the fish would need the atmosphere to provide, carry the oxygen to them and so forth, so that they could live in the sea. Day three, the plants were created, And that was in preparation for day six, where animals and man were created. So it was a very neat, orderly process that God went through in creating our world. Recently, I had the privilege of visiting Patagonia. Some of you may not know where Patagonia is. Patagonia is the very southern tip of South America. And there are not too many people who live down there. It's a fairly sparsely populated area. Beautiful mountains, beautiful lakes, beautiful rivers, and pure, pure, clean air. It was a wonderful experience.
How did the water taste?
The water was wonderful. The water was wonderful. And there was one of the big national parks down there we visited, and they said, feel free to drink the water from anywhere, any stream, anywhere, because it's all pure and clean, no contamination. Mm-hmm. I hope they can keep it that way. It was really marvelous.
Well, the water is good in Montana too.
Yeah,
it's just that you have to watch out if some animal died in it somewhere up. You get giardia, yeah, or whatever you call it.
Yeah,
and you never know if that happens. So they advise you not to ever drink the water,
yeah,
even though it's very, in most cases, it's very fresh and clean.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, they said it's safe to drink the water, and we did. We drank water from the streams and so forth, and we certainly didn't get anything. Maybe we're just lucky, but it was wonderful tasting water.
Did the air smell any different?
It was pure and clean, and toward the evening of the days, the wind would be pretty vigorous. So we saw a lot of air. Well, it's fascinating, turning back to our story of creation. When God kissed Adam and breathed in his body the breath of life, the first human cells came to life. And every human being and every cell in every human being is a descendant from those same very first cells in the body of Adam. Every one of us is a direct descendant through divisions and multiplications and all the other processes that we know, that every one of us is a part of Adam, but the way he started out. And Eve, of course, when the rib was taken out. And we remember, of course, that at that time, when Adam was created, God had already prepared that perfect garden. I mean, how could you ask for a nicer place to live? You know, not only beautiful, but, I mean, the smell must have been, I'm sure the flowers must have just had wonderful aromas. The beautiful trees that were there, the atmosphere must have been just super refreshing.
Getting back to this, Adam, haven't the people studying the genetics said that all of us seem to come from a common person? I read that in one of the newspapers.
Yes, and they usually trace it to a woman. And the reason they do that, and I'm certainly not even capable of describing all the details, but the DNA that that's in the nucleus of our cells, we get half from our father and half from our mother. But it turns out that there's some extra RNA and other identifiable materials that come along in the ovum, in the egg that come from the mother, that they can trace back. Of course, there isn't such a thing from the father, so we can only trace it back to the mother. And so they believe by tracing that other substance, they can go back to the original Eve, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Of course, when they do that tracing, they go way back further than mm-hmm. what the Bible
yeah.
seems
well,
to. By their genealogy, how far back it was, they trace it way back further than that. So.
Yeah, they believe that they can trace it back to a couple million years ago, which is...
So it doesn't mesh together.
Time-wise.
Time-wise,
no.
I'm reminded of something my father told me. He says, as much as we know, we don't know much.
Yeah, exactly. mm-hmm. Very true. Mm-hmm. Well, just to get into the chemical composition a little bit more, air is a combination of gases in which oxygen forms about 21% of the total product. Our entire atmosphere, if we take all the atmosphere all around our Earth and all north, south, east, west, etc., our entire atmosphere weighs about 5,000 trillion tons. We think that the air is just very light there, but remember, every square inch of your skin, is the air is pressing down with 14 pounds per square inch
wow.
of pressure. So, a lot of air up there. Other component gases include nitrogen, argon. I've tried to put these in order of their how common they are in our atmosphere. Nitrogen, is, of course, is around 78-79%. Argon, water vapor, which is highly variable. Of course, we recognize depending on whether you're just having a rainfall or whether you're out in the middle of a desert somewhere, there's a highly variable amounts of water. Then carbon dioxide, then neon, then helium, and then methane, krypton, hydrogen, xenon, and small amounts of other trace gases. So it's quite a mixture of gases that make up our air. But by far the majority is nitrogen and oxygen, and all the others just make up, I think, less than 1% altogether. The amount of the oxygen in the air is the ideal percentage, as far as we can tell, for the breathing requirements of the creatures God made. So how did that work out so neat like that? And the question I would ask, not only how did it work out so neat like that, how does God keep it in balance like that? I mean, we know that oxygen is being absorbed all the time by animals and humans, and it's being incorporated into molecules in our body and so forth. And, of course, I realize that there's not much oxygen escaping or coming into our atmosphere from the space. But still, it seems to me like with all the oxygen that's tied up in trees and plants and humans and animals and so forth, that balance could easily get off.
Well, God is love, and He made a loving environment where things automatically give to another. I always picture when you're in a forest, as you're breathing, you can almost identify with the trees. They're breathing out what you breathe in. Mm-hmm. You breathe out what they breathe in. Mm-hmm. And you're helping each other survive. Mm-hmm. And so how God is keeping our atmosphere correct today, I think it's getting more and more difficult. We need to have more greenery. Mm-hmm. Now,
are you saying that in your question there is an answer that it's being maintained by the hand of God? Or are you saying...
I'm asking a question. I'm asking you, what do you think? Do you think...
Well, it depends who you talk to. Some people who believe that the hand of God is actually keeping things mm-hmm. In balance mm-hmm. Would say, well, it's the hand of God. Other people say it's very fragile. I mean, we're driving SUVs around, and it could upset this balance, cause a higher carbon mixture in there and all that. And yeah. So there's people arguing back and forth whether or not that will actually happen.
And that's exactly what I'm talking about. How has God maintained it as long as He has, if He did?
It seems to me that what He's done is, apart from having an overview and control, He set up some subsystems. Mm-hmm. Yes, we have heat, we have light, we have temperature variations. Mm-hmm. Hot air rises, cold air comes in. We have winds from little gusts to major hurricanes. We have ocean currents. It all feeds into this. And what's happening now in our lifetime, probably more than ever, yes, man has got the capacity to start messing things up a little bit.
Yeah.
The system works fine if it's not messed too much with, but we seem to be getting on the edge of that. But I think there are subsystems that are there that help keep things right.
Yeah, there's some kind of a feedback system that must be that God has set in place that helps to maintain this balance, because it doesn't change.
I don't believe God was caught by surprise.
No, He knew what was coming.
He knew what was coming, and he had plans for all of it.
Now, there was just a volcano that blew up in Iceland.
Yeah.
That's a lot of gases. I mean, mm-hmm. that's way... I mean, I don't think man can generate that. It'd take him about 10 or 20 years to generate that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of wonder if there are subsystems that we don't understand that keeps everything in balance.
I think we have the fairly provable capacity to analyze things, but I heard this morning earlier in the day that the comment was made where the justification came from, I'm not sure, that said man and all the worst he's ever done in the history on this world has never polluted as much as a volcano like this one going off now and Krakatoa and some of those other places. You're right. It belches that out very quickly in vast, uncontrolled quantities.
And and poisonous gases, too.
Oh, yeah. Really bad stuff.
Well, the trade winds, they're wonderful, aren't they? They just kind of take care of a lot of that.
You mean the volcano did not obey our cap-and-trade laws?
That's right. That's what we're saying.
It'd be nice if we could tax that volcano.
It would be nice if we could capture all that energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So. Well, there's plenty of evidence to suggest that our immediate atmosphere, our atmospheric environment, was carefully tuned by God for just our personal needs. That's amazing. A famous astronomer by the name of Hugh Ross has made a long list of things that the atmosphere does for us. I'm just going to look at a few of those. Number 23 on his list says oxygen to nitrogen ratio in the atmosphere. If larger, that is more oxygen, advanced life functions would proceed too quickly. If smaller, advanced life functions would proceed too slowly, and there would be problems. And number 24, carbon dioxide level in the atmosphere. If greater, runaway greenhouse effect would develop and the whole Earth would heat up. If less, plants would be unable to maintain efficient photosynthesis. So there you go. You see, it's again, it has to be balanced just right. And then number 28 on his list, oxygen quantity in the atmosphere. If greater, plants and hydrocarbons would burn up too easily. If less, advanced animals would have too little to breathe. So again, I think we have a lot to be thankful for, and surely we do.
Well, you know, when man tries to create the atmosphere that God created, runs into trouble, like in the spacecrafts and also in deep diving equipment. Mm-hmm. We try to put the correct atmosphere, and if things are out of balance, the diver gets what's called the bends or dies, and in outer space they would die. So it's a tricky thing to keep it... I always think man tries things like there's the airplane. It pollutes, it's noisy, because I live by an airport. And you see a bird fly by, which is God's design, and the bird flies, no pollution except maybe a few droppings, and it can even reproduce itself.
Yeah.
So God does things better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you talk about pollution. I told people I don't like to ride horses because I don't like their exhaust. So, so it's still, pollution's pollution.
Not like a plane.
Well, when God created Adam and Eve and breathed those first life-giving breaths into their nostrils and mouths, he was imparting not only the nitrogen, oxygen, etc., of this Earth's atmosphere, but the power of the Holy Spirit, which is the essence of the heavenly atmosphere. And, of course, that power, God's power, gave life to our first cells. Those two types of atmosphere are essential for all life. Paul talks about that. In fact, he talked about it in one of his sermons. Look, for example, at Acts 17:25. It's a very interesting little passage for several reasons. Acts 17:25. And I'm going to read once again from the Good News Bible. Nor does he, he's talking about God, need anything that we can supply by working for him, since it is he himself who gives life and breath and everything else to everyone. So God is a source of everything we need. It's interesting that in Paul, in quoting that, he goes down a little bit further. Look at verse 28, yet God is actually not far from any one of us. As someone has said, in him we live and move and exist. It is as some of your poets have said, we too are his children. Interestingly enough, there Paul is quoting from a pagan poet from the 6th century, from Crete. Very interesting situation. But they recognized, even way back then, even the pagans recognized, that our total dependence is upon God.
Isn't truth truth?
Yeah.
You if it's truth, it's truth.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, all of us at one time or another in our lives, probably especially when we were children, have had the experience of stretching, you know, taking some deep breaths. I think of camping when it's in an environment where it's fairly cold and so forth. And you go out there and you take a deep breath and, boy, you just feel like, you know, you're taking in life. And you just feel like it, breathing it in there. What happens when we do that? Ever stop to think about that?
We help the air exchange in our lungs. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we don't take a deep breath and exhale correctly, we're leaving dead air in our lungs and just shallowy breathing. Mm-hmm. And so, if that's a word. Mm-hmm. And so we're doing a complete air exchange.
Well, when we do that, if we're breathing in pure air, it seems so refreshing. How does it make us feel? It just makes you feel vibrant almost, doesn't it?
Well, physically, doesn't it send oxygen to your brain
sure.
and your heart? And
yeah, yeah. Pushes the, if all the time we get patients in, and I'm head of a big clinic, and so you get a patient in and they're having trouble breathing. Well, almost immediately we clip a little thing on their finger that just sends a beam of light through their finger and tells us what the level of oxygen saturation is in their blood. And if you ask them to take a couple of deep breaths, assuming they're not, you know, on the verge of dying, that you can see that oxygen level just climbs up. It's amazing.
You can actually see it that quickly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, within a few seconds.
That's a lesson for all of us.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you think of a time maybe when you were outdoors, maybe in the mountains surrounded by flowers and trees and very clean, pure air, and you took a few deep breaths? How did it make you feel? Did God intend that breathing the atmosphere of heaven would invigorate us in the same way spiritually?
What would you consider the atmosphere of heaven?
Well, of course, I don't know if it's made out of a different composition, but I'm saying if we can take in deep breaths of, say, pure mountain air, and it just makes us feel so alive, the atmosphere of heaven, and when I say the atmosphere of heaven, I'm talking about the wind, the breath, the spirit of heaven. I would say that would be when we communicate with the Holy Spirit, when we feel Him giving us spiritual life.
When we do Bible study and when we pray, do we feel like we have taken deep breaths of heaven?
That's the way it should be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the way it should be.
If we don't receive that, then our breathing of that atmosphere is not correct or full.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there's a number of places in the Bible where it talks about spiritual breath and so forth. Let's just pick a couple very quickly, or even the results of not having spiritual breath. Look at Daniel 5:22, just as an example. Yet you, his son Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, even though you knew all this, but you have exalted yourself against the Lord of heaven. They have brought the vessels of his house before you, and you and your nobles, your wives and your concubines, have been drinking wine from them, and you have praised the gods of silver and gold, of bronze, iron, wood, and stone, which do not see, hear, or understand. But the God in whose hand are your life, breath, and all your ways, you have not glorified. I read that time from the New American Standard Bible because it talks specifically about the life breath. And other examples. Look at Psalms 146, verse 4.
Was that saying just the opposite? If you do not breathe in God's word and communicate with Him, that you're going to be suffocating yourself? And sometimes I think you can even see that. Can you see people who do not follow God's ways? And people who follow God's ways, sometimes they'll just radiate. Mm-hmm. And you'll wonder, what does that person have?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, an example of what happens when you don't follow God's ways is found in Psalms 146, verse 4. And I'll read this time again from the Good News Bible on the right. When they die, talking about human beings, when they die, they return to the dust. On that day, all their plans come to an end. And, you know, it says, if you look at the one that's closer to the King James on the left, in that very day, his thoughts perish. So if we're not sustained by not only the physical air, oxygen, and the atmosphere physically, but the spiritual atmosphere, the power of God that gives us life, everything stops. We cease to think. That's it. It's all over.
So much for all your plans, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Now,
go ahead.
There's a lot of analogy here we're talking about. If you want to take it real far and you die in faith of Jesus, mm-hmm. that you're going to be resurrected,
yeah.
that's a plan.
Well,
and that plan does not come to an end when you die.
No.
The point is that whatever processes is working is ceased when you die.
Yeah.
And it's might be held at the point when you die. And
God keeps you. He has your, what I sometimes call it, the software. He maintains your thoughts. He has your full record of everything that's in your mind, all your records and everything. And one day when you're resurrected, he just puts that software back into your brain and you're ready to go again.
I hope he improves it.
He'll definitely improve the computer model, okay? The hardware will be better. The software will be the same. But
the software is our responsibility to improve?
The software is our responsibility.
It will be cleaned up.
Yes, yes, I certainly hope so.
Debugged?
Debugged.
Yeah.
Well, why doesn't he just do that with all the sinners and fix all them up and debug everything there at their
maybe they don't. Maybe they don't want to be debugged.
Where would the freedom be?
Yeah, we all made choices.
Well, even if they don't want to be, you know, isn't that a software problem? If they don't want to be?
Well, it would be a software problem in the sense that we make the choice. It's our character that we build. But, you know, very clearly, Revelation 22:11 says, let him who is holy remain holy, let him who is pure remain pure, but let him who is filthy remain filthy.
Well, then the software doesn't change. I mean, you get resurrected same character.
That's what I said. I said the hardware changes, but the software doesn't. Now, you know.
The only way maybe the software can change is if you're always praying, God, help me be a better person. Help me think better thoughts.
But the time for that change that happens now.
Now.
That's right.
From the time, between the time you're dead and the time you're resurrected.
And you always have to be careful with your examples, not carry them too far.
Yeah, exactly.
These are software and hardware is kind of an analogy here.
Yeah.
You know, so you can take them too far.
Well, I can remember when the Bible talks about the books of heaven being opened, mm-hmm. and you kind of wondered, what in the world? These books? Well, computers have solved a lot of those problems, hasn't mm-hmm. it?
Yeah. When you can put so much information on the tiny little chips, it's just amazing. If we can do that, what can God do?
Exactly.
Yeah. Amazing.
He says you will account for every idle word, mm-hmm. which kind of concerns me because I've had many idle words.
Well, consider the many ways in which the atmosphere not only provides oxygen and all of that, but it also protects us. The air with the water vapor in it maintains a fairly constant temperature over most of our Earth. And that's a huge benefit to us. I mean, we know that it's cold at the North Pole and the South Pole, and it's warmer in the tropics, but not that much variation. I mean, think of what would happen if we had no atmosphere. It would be, you know, on the sides where the sun is shining, it would be, what, 250 degrees, and on the side where there's no sunshine, it would be 250 below or something like that. I don't know exactly what the figures are, but, I mean, there would be a huge variation.
Well, from a female point of view, if you live in the desert, you get wrinkles faster, whereas if you live in England where the fog is, you have a very nice...
Well, there are some advantages
sure?
to that.
That's what I've read.
I'm not sure it's worth it to spend all your life living in the fog
in
and
the fog.
Salt water, for the benefit of having a slightly better complexion. Well, so that's one way in which the air, our atmosphere, protects us. It helps to maintain a more, and that's part of what the jet stream does, too. It circulates the air and moves the oxygen around, out over the air. Remember, we suggested already that a big percentage of our oxygen comes from the algae in the ocean, so that air has to be moved out over the ocean so the algae can get to it and change the carbon dioxide back into oxygen.
Question. Mm-hmm. On this volcano that erupted and polluted the air around it, mm-hmm. are they analyzing where the jet stream is going to carry?
Yes. Very much so. Oh, absolutely.
Is it coming our way?
It's going the other way.
It's going the other way.
And what countries?
China? It's going right now into England is where it hit first, Ireland, England, right. And it's moving on into Scandinavia, and some of the southern stuff is going down across, probably Germany and Poland and so forth.
Well, Mount St. Helens, when it blew, yeah. it actually went around the Earth several times.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, before it was completely gone, yeah. But the longer it's up there, the more of the dangerous stuff drops out. You know, it won't be too long before it'll be relatively safe to fly. Anyway, going back to our ways in which our atmosphere protects us, we're protected from most of the harmful rays that come from our sun. We need the sunlight, as we all know, because that powers the plants to turn our carbon dioxide back into oxygen. So ultimately, that chain that keeps recycling, if you will, that chain, that process is driven by sunlight. So we need to be protected from the X-rays, the cosmic rays, some of the ultraviolet rays, and probably other things that we don't even know about that we're being protected from our atmosphere. With our Earth tipped over, you know, in its axis a certain number of degrees, and going around the sun like this, we end up with these seasons that we have and changes in the daytime and so forth that we have come to enjoy and appreciate. It's amazing what a congenial environment really God has created for us.
A question. Mm-hmm. God has done this for us, but of course man gets in there. Now we have many, many satellites going around the world, mm-hmm. beaming everywhere. We have cell phones. We have, mm-hmm. what is it called, Wi-Fi, where it's wireless. Do any of those elements in the atmosphere towards Earth from going all around the Earth, have they been studied? Are they harmless? I mean, is man...
Well, you know, I mean, that's a good question. We assume they're relatively harmless because we've been living here on this Earth for so long and similar rays have been coming from the sun since, you know, the days of creation. And, you know, we have survived so far.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the biggest argument in that respect.
Weren't they wondering if the bees were disappearing because of these radio waves?
And you've heard the arguments that, you know, maybe kids are going to end up with getting brain cancer from cell phone use and so forth. Who knows? I mean, there's always, tomorrow morning, we may hear on the news that somebody has proved something that we never thought of before. So,
mm-hmm. Well, what we can do to our atmosphere, like, when the fruit fly came in to California,
yeah.
and Orange County was the Department of Agriculture
sprayed
I forget the name of the chemical. It eliminated
Malathion.
Something. It eliminated the butterflies mm-hmm. and several, and they're just starting to come back. And
just in time for the fruit flies to come back, you mean?
Another spray.
Well, if we realize that the atmosphere that we breathe today, that we live in, that surrounds us all the time, is the same atmosphere that God put here in Adam and Eve's day. It hasn't changed. I mean, we recycled it, but here it is, still there. Do we as Christians have a moral responsibility to try to preserve it as we pass it on to our children. I mean, should we Christians, should we be campaigning, maybe in Washington and so forth, to get our nation to do something more to preserve our atmosphere as pure as possible under the circumstances?
What you just said means that God is the greatest recycling person that has ever existed, his whole system.
Yep.
And so then we should really go after his model, live after his model, and recycle.
Yeah.
God is recycling everything.
Yep.
Now, as far as that question goes, the other question that comes up is, do you think that God, in his designing abilities, would make it so fragile that we could mess things up, like some people say it could be messed up? I mean, there could be some scams going on, you know, to get you to do something with some information that may or may not be happening.
Well, one of the things that worries me in that respect is we're told that there will be, at the end of our world's history, 7 last plagues.
Mm-hmm.
You people have talked about them.
You think they're going to be natural? Are they going to come on by God?
Well, of course, that's a good question. We can't tell that for sure, but some of them really sound like pollutions of the atmosphere, that kind of stuff. And it's possible that we're going to do that to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you know, you can, all the warnings they give you about the environment, the things being unbalanced and everything, you could actually take that model and explain it with the plagues of Egypt too, you know.
Yeah.
But there wasn't anything really that man was doing to cause those.
No. I'm not saying that God won't do it. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying read that, you know. And I'll tell you what, if when I look at those plagues, I can't believe that a loving God would do that to his children.
Mm-hmm.
So I have, and I understand that's a philosophical point. That's not, I don't have a verse in the Bible that says he wouldn't do it. But what it suggests to me is that maybe that what happens at the end is God backs off and says, okay, Satan, this is your chance. You've wanted to run things for a long time. Let's see what would happen if you were in charge.
Yes.
And I think that's a very distinct possibility, because we read over in Revelation 13 that it sounds like human beings are going to be working in close cooperation with the devil himself to try to do some awful things.
Mm-hmm.
We do have the verse in the Bible that says God is love.
Mm-hmm.
And would a loving God do that?
Yeah.
We're also told that the earth is waxing old like a garment. I think we're living in that part of the Earth's history, and there's a school of thought. It's interesting you mentioned that the plagues of Egypt. There's a school of thought around that there was pollution back then and terrible winds, and let's face it, there's no trees now where they used to be, and they wonder whether man might not have brought some of that on. I think the trap for us is, and I wonder this, we've been warned to be careful in our involvement in politics, and some of what you're mentioning there, I think there's it's one thing to be careful with your environment, it's another thing to go overboard and get fanatical about it.
Yeah.
I think there's a medium somewhere that we need to be aware of and try and maintain.
Now, we don't want to turn it into a religion.
No.
Well, with the
and
Greek
that's where it's starting to go here and there.
With the Greek controversy in mind, God is letting things, proving to the universe and to us that the devil is not, cannot do what he says he's going to, always wants to do, rule the world. And
well, and let me pick up on what you said there. What would it be like if we all of a sudden found out something has happened and our whole air is polluted? What if somebody, if a terrorist group got a hold of a dirty couple of dirty bombs and blew it up, I mean, what would you do? You can't live without air.
We'll die with the wicked, because we have to. We're playing out.
Yeah.
A great controversy.
Well, we've all seen examples, some terrible examples, as well as some fairly mild examples of what happens if you breathe contaminated air. Mm-hmm. Think of all the people who died of the secondary effects of the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, for example. Other people who have been involved one way or another in nuclear pollution kind of situations.
Russia.
Nuclear
plutonium. Absorbing some of that stuff.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. It's just really, really scary. So, do you know anybody who studied? Let me just throw this question out. Do you know anybody who studied the mechanisms which God has put in place to sort of maintain the purity of our atmosphere? It must be something more than just chance, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. As far as explaining what's happening to keep it balanced?
Yeah. Keep it balanced, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they come up with ideas, but I don't think they could actually do an experiment to duplicate it.
No, we wouldn't. But, I mean, we study everything else. Hasn't anybody tried to study a thing that says, well, what prevents our oxygen from going to 19% instead of 21%? What prevents it from going to 23% or even 22 or 20?
I know, like, they've done experiments with greenhouses, you know, to grow things where they pump carbon dioxide in, you know, and it actually increases the growth faster. Mm-hmm. So in that case, it's actually, since it's growing faster, it's producing more oxygen faster. Mm-hmm. So there may be that in itself might show some kind of
balance.
Equalizing thing happening. Like if maybe the carbon does go up in percentage in a minute little bit,
The trees
might grow a little faster and produce more.
Okay.
You know, so there might be some sort of balance. Yeah. You know, there's some sort of balance that could happen.
Well, sometimes that can get out of whack because, like, the ranchers that try to get chickens to produce more eggs, maybe they produce more eggs, but are the eggs as nutritious as ones done naturally?
Yeah.
So.
Well, in light of what we've suggested here, I think it's pretty clear that if we're going to exercise, which all of us need to exercise, exercising in the pure outdoor air would be ideal, especially early in the morning when they say there's the least amount of pollution. Where possible, we should sleep with our windows open at night. Mm-hmm. I love to sleep with my windows open when the temperature's not completely unthinkable. This helps to give us good, pure blood to circulate all through our bodies and, of course, promotes health. This good, clean blood supply will soothe our nerves, stimulate the appetite, aid in digestion, etc. It also tends to assist us in very good, refreshing sleep as well. I think we've all experienced that. One commentator in the book Ministry of Health and Healing said the lungs should be allowed the greatest freedom possible. Their capacity is developed by free action. It diminishes if they are cramped and compressed. Ill effects follow the practice, so common, especially in sedentary pursuits, of stooping at one's work. In this position, it is impossible to breathe deeply. Superficial breathing soon becomes a habit, and the lungs lose their power to expand. And how many of us have experienced some of that in our own lives from doing that kind of stuff, even temporarily?
Well, you know, even the way the classrooms are today, we have, like, hour classes where students sit at these little desks, stooped over writing, and I think it's good. Several teachers I knew, and I tried it too, is they would have the students about three times during the period get up and do something, like get up and go get a piece of paper or something to get them out of that position and to start the air circulating so their brain wouldn't go completely dead.
Yeah.
So that's not a good position for your lungs.
One thing that was mentioned on the news recently, they said that there's a school somewhere in the East, I've forgotten exactly where, that they have, when the children come to school in the morning, the first thing they do is exercise.
That's
and
cool.
During the course of the day, they have treadmills and other things like this so that the students are exercising on a regular basis during their class periods, and their average grades have gone up. Yeah.
Because you can't take a lively little one and put them at a desk and say, sit there for an hour and listen to me talk.
Yeah. No. Well,
there's a lot of jobs now that where people are at computers all day.
All day long.
Yeah, it's not good.
Well, look at one more verse before we come to run out of time here. Look at Genesis 1:26 at the end of creation week. Genesis 1:26, and I'll read once again from the Good News Translation. Then God said, and now we will make human beings. They will be like us and resemble us. They will have power over the fish, the birds, and all the animals, domestic and wild, large and small. So God created human beings, making them to be like himself, and so forth. Does that verse suggest that we are responsible for our environment? Now, let me just sort of tweak your brains a little bit. Did any of the animals sin so that they have to die?
No.
They died because we sinned.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? And they've suffered diseases and they die of cancer and they go through all the problems they go through because of our sin. How far should we carry that? Are we responsible? Should we think of ourselves as more responsible for the other creatures who live around us?
Yes.
Well, if that's true, did God give them an owner's manual to make sure that they did everything right? Or
how would we even keep track of them? Because this one may need something different than that one over there does.
Right.
Yeah.
But it seems like, according to the story, what messed everything up was just that one disobedience. And it's kind of hard to trace back all the effects that happen in nature because of that.
Yeah.
So it would be a little difficult to make those connections, you know, concrete.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about the spiritual environment a little bit. We've talked about the physical environment quite a lot. What things constitute the social environment in which each of us lives? Would that not include our attitudes, maybe our feelings, our emotions, our mutual support for each other, you know, give them a hug once in a while, and love for our fellow human beings? Wouldn't that be implied by God's command, Jesus' command, his summary of God's law? You love God first and you love your fellow human beings as you love yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be the ideal social environment if we all loved each other?
I think of the family, and it's really important for the father and mother to have a good attitude, yeah, atmosphere while they're raising children. And, you know, parents get so involved, and mm-hmm, you forget that. But when it's all over and looking back, you say, yeah, I should have done that more.
Yeah. I had a pastor one time that I'll never forget this. He stood up and he said, the most important thing a father can do for his children is to love their mother. Mm. Yeah, I think that's what you're trying to say to us there. Yeah. Well, once again, in the book Christ Object Lessons, we have this very cogent comment. Every soul is surrounded by an atmosphere of its own. An atmosphere, it may be, charged with the life-giving power of faith, courage, and hope, and sweet with the fragrance of love. Or it may be heavy and chill with the gloom of discontent and selfishness, or poisonous with the deadly taint of cherished sin. By the atmosphere surrounding us, every person with whom we come in contact is consciously or unconsciously affected. And I think we've all demonstrated that. I mean, how does it make you feel when you come to work in the morning and you're busy and you come maybe walking down a hallway or something like this and you meet someone who's just smiling and beaming and they say, good morning, you know, or maybe a few other words and they call you by name. I mean, it lifts you, you know. And by contrast, you can come in and you meet somebody, mm-hmm, and they walk by and their head is down. They don't even want to talk to you. They don't want to even mention your name. How does it make you feel?
I think what's interesting in what she said, she didn't put the responsibility of the atmosphere that's around you on the people that's around you.
Yeah.
That you're responsible for your atmosphere. You could be in a terrible environment and through God's help create an atmosphere around you that's wonderful. Or you could be surrounded by a loving family and just be a horrible person to be around. So right there, she's saying that it's the atmosphere you make around you,
mm-hmm.
and not that other people make around you.
Yeah.
So it's all attitude? You make a decision on your attitude?
And part of that is partly that's true. But the feedback is there, too. As Joanne suggested, if you're bright and cheery and saying good morning to everybody, it's more likely that they're going to say that back to you, and you're going to live in a better environment.
And we get this from the atmosphere of heaven mm-hmm. being in our lives.
I think it's from attitude and always asking God to help you that day, help you. Because you can't do it on your own. The world will just slap you down every day.
Is there a kind of spiritual pollution? We've talked about pollution of our physical atmosphere. Is there a spiritual pollution?
Well, that's what Satan is doing to our world. He's trying to, isn't it?
Can you name any kind of spiritual pollution?
Spiritual pollutions.
Lies.
Ungodliness.
Yeah. I thought about this materialism, our world where people, all they care about is getting money.
Competition.
Atheism, evolution, narcissism, pornography. Look at the internet, what's happening to many people on the internet.
So-called music.
Yeah.
Doesn't it say in Revelation, lawlessness? So there'll be a lot of lawlessness.
Mm. Yeah.
Pride.
Yeah. It sounds like everything we've said here is value pollution.
Yeah. So, is it possible for us as Christians to bring a heavenly atmosphere into our environment?
Mm-hmm. It's our duty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And is it possible? It's very hard.
Mm-hmm.
But it's our duty.
Well, when people who work around us or live among us, or our family members and so forth, do they believe that we carry the atmosphere of heaven with us? Do they see us as friends of God? Do they see us as the kind of people they like to be around? That's the question we'd like to leave you with until next week. Have a great week.